Hey everyone, this is Stelianti.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about email marketing.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So how to think about utilizing emails, sending emails, what type of emails to send as part of your overall marketing strategy. So we have an episode, we did an episode prior on email that was more kind of cold emails for more from a sales perspective. And that was episode 14. Wow, I didn't realize it was that early. But if you want to check it out, if you want to check out the cold email episode, Heaton and I recorded, just Google the startupchat.com episode 14 and you'll find it. But today we wanted to talk about email more from a marketing perspective than a sales perspective. I get a shit ton of emails. You do. You get a ton of emails. I'm part of a, I'm using and testing so many different products. I'm part of so many different people's lists and newsletters and all kinds of things. So I see a lot of email from a consumer or receiving end of things, but then also, you know, we've over this year in particular built our email list up and started experimenting a little bit more with it, but it's still something that I think is fairly neglected in our overall marketing in terms of really being effective with email. So I wanted to riffraff on that and see what works today. How should company think about email? What are some common mistakes companies make today that we've noticed and all that good stuff?
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to jump in and just talk a little bit about like email, because one of the biggest things that I hear from people and one of the biggest tricks that I suggest to people is pretty simple. So one thing I hear is I get a lot of email. I hate email. So that's like the general sentiment a lot of founders or people inside of a company that are kind of thinking about email marketing and things like that have as a mental model. Then on the other end of it, the thing I think you, me, my co-founder, a lot of the businesses that are successful know is that email is a wonderful marketing channel. It is probably the number one marketing channel that you have full control over in terms of you can build a list, you can know who's on the list, and you can decide what to send them and have control over that. So it's one of the biggest open platforms that no one company generally owns. Obviously, Gmail is becoming more and more popular, and there's a whole bunch of things around the promotion tab and all that, but that's getting really deep into the details. So one, and it's not even a tip, it's just like your mental model should shift from, I hate email, so we're not going to send that much email, to we're going to test sending as much email as possible so we can figure out what kind of emails we should be sending. And I think that there's so many people that don't realize that email is not bad. Email is not something most people don't like. Email is a truth in today's reality, regardless of who you are. Now, the one caveat is if you're targeting post-millennials, so people that are high school or early college, they might not be really into email, meaning they just don't open their email, right? But there's a lot of other channels for them. So this is more like if you're dealing with people that are essentially, you know, in their 20s and above, email is still literally one of the biggest channels, probably the number one channel that you can utilize in your business that you're probably not utilizing enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And some investor, I think, said that if some people don't think you're spamming them, you're not sending enough emails or something. It was like a whole blog post on like, and with a lot of data even about how too many companies in SaaS specifically, I think this was about, are not sending enough email, right? And I remember we even talked about this, you know, and we can talk about some of the tactics later on like, you know, when you send emails today, you can track who's opening them and who's not, and you can start sending more emails to the people that seem to like them and open them and engage with them, and less or stop sending emails to people that don't care, right? But overall, I do agree that there is this attitude that because, especially probably because like founders might get overloaded in email, that we have a dislike for it so that we don't want to use it. It's the same thing with like pop-ups, right? A lot of pop-ups seem to be effective in terms of capturing emails and converting people to give their email. So marketers love pop-ups, but then founders and a lot of other people within startups, more kind of the engineering team, hate pop-ups. So they always like, you see this a lot with startups where the founding team will lobby against something that's working because it's against their personal taste and preferences, right? So this is but I don't want to open up that Pandora's box with the pop-ups. Let's talk about email a little bit, right? So today, when it comes to marketing, there's obviously a ton of type of email that you could do. And we're going to exclude the kind of outbound cold email, emailing people that didn't expect to hear from you and didn't subscribe or give you their email. That was covered under the episode of cold emailing. But today we want to talk about people that have opted in. They've given you their email in one way or another, either because they're customers of your service or because they sign up for a specific list or because they subscribe to your blog or something. At some point in time, they decided to give you voluntarily their email because they wanted something in return to be, you know, notified of your content, get your ebook or white paper, participate in a webinar, whatever, trial your product. Now, as a company, you have these emails, right? There's a plethora of things you could be doing, right? You can send these people newsletters. You can set up drip emails to email them based on how they're interacting with your product or other properties of your content or marketing properties. You could do all kinds of stuff to send these people email. Where do you start? And what is today something that you think is not maybe working anymore as well, or companies do and they do wrong? And what are some of the basic or simple things, or maybe even novel things that most companies don't do with all those emails they collect? Let's exclude that they don't send them enough email. That's probably the number one like mistake we've committed at CloseIO. And this is crazy because I'm such a loud advocate for taking action and doing things, is that we had all these email lists that we didn't send emails to, or not enough. Right? So that's probably the biggest mistake, is you're collecting these emails and you don't do anything with it. And okay, so now that I already started, let me finish that thought with saying why, in our case, the mistake we made was that we tried to be too sophisticated too quickly, which is usually ending up slowing you down. So we had the ambition to create very distinct drip email marketing campaigns for all our different lists. And because that was a daunting task, and because we didn't have enough resources, we never got really started doing that right. Right. So we're collecting all these emails, but we're not getting into the job of sending them emails. And there's a simple remedy, which is start collecting emails in all these different places, but just put them all in one big list and send them useful content, relevant content. And once you get better and more sophisticated, or you have more resources, you can start segmenting that and get smart about it. So this is both the mistake we made and the reason why and what you should do about it in my summary. But I'm dying to hear some of your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I know we weren't going to talk about pop-ups, but I'm going to talk about one type of pop-up that's been one of the most effective strategies, which is when people try to leave your website, you should pop up an email collection box. It's the number one tip I can give anybody that wants to collect more emails. I don't care what page they're on your website, whether it's your marketing site, your blog, or even your support site, to be honest. And I would pop up an email collection. There's a million tools out there to do this, so I'm not going to get into that. But it's basically called an exit intent pop-up. And what it does is when people try to leave your site, it pops up the screen. It is not obtrusive. It's not really annoying to most people. And it really is effective at collecting emails. So if there's one tip I'd give, it's basically use that to collect more email. The reason I say that is because if you have an email list, the one thing that happens is that over time, as people get pretty old on that email list, their engagement with the email list or the emails does go down. It's natural, right? Over time, you get bored, or you know, you get tired of the same thing. No matter how great it is, it's just what older cohorts of subscribers to your list end up having, you know, less engagement with you, unless it's like super hyper engaging, which is possible. Like there's been certain things out there that are like that. What I like to do though, outside of that, is like just easily figure out what is the content that we can create. And when we create it, can we just send it to people via email? For example, if you're creating a blog post a week, or even ideally, if we're creating two or three blog posts a week, I see a lot of teams debating, should we do it in a newsletter? Or should we send one every time we post? If you haven't started either, send one every time you post. Don't do a newsletter. Most people don't need more newsletters, but they're happy to get the option to know when you have something new and the option to go read it. You know, especially if they've signed up for your product or signed up for your newsletter and they're really engaged in the category that you're servicing. So in your case, like if you post something new on the close.io blog, you should definitely be sending that post to all your email lists, especially the ones, obviously, that subscribe to be notified when you have new posts on your blog, right? So I get into these debates with people about like, oh, no, I want to do a weekly thing. or I want to do, you know, I want to send everyone, and they start debating it. And my advice is start by sending every single post, see what your open rates are, what your click rates are, and see if that's acceptable. Once you start increasing your volume a lot, I would actually go to sending it just 2 or 3 times a week. And then I would go start thinking about a newsletter or something like that when you have a ton of content. One of the reasons is if you, and I just want to play this logic out, and this is very content marketing oriented, but many people, well, I'm sure, are listening, are either considering it or doing it. I know we are in all of the things we're doing, and I know you do in all the things you're doing. And so one of the things I would consider in the logic here for me is this. If you post something, you're going to promote it as a business. You're going to go put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, put it on all the channels you have. And if you're not using email, you should put it on email too. The reason is if someone has to wait 3 or 4 days to see it in your newsletter, there's a high chance that if they're engaged in your category, in your case, if they're a salesperson, they've already read it. So you're kind of wasting their time in a weird way by giving it again in a newsletter when they've already read it some other way and you didn't send it to them right when you posted it. So I think there's a lot of balance there, but like if you aren't doing it, just start sending more email like that. Here's another one. If you're regularly making updates to your product and you have a list of people who have signed up for your product, you should be sending those updates of what you've done once a week at least. And the reason is like people need the SaaS is competitive more than ever. Most of you that are listening are probably working on SaaS or something like that. And so if you don't think about it like that, then basically what's going to happen is customers are not going to know that you've been working for them, that you've been making the service part of your product better. Because that's why it's software as a service. It means we're continually thinking about the service we provide to customers, or we should be. And so you should be telling them all those improvements you're making, even when they're minor, because sometimes those minor improvements make a big difference to your customers. I mean, we're victims of this at Kissmetrics, where like we wouldn't send these emails, even though we made great updates to customers. We'd only send like one-off ones when we thought it was a big deal. What we're learning these days is like people want to know that you're looking out for them. People want to know that your engineering team, your product team, your team is doing work for them. And so I would recommend also sending that. I consider that product marketing, but I also oftentimes that's the marketing team's responsibility, not the product team's responsibility. So that's another one where like it's just like, hey, if you just think about sending more email, think about all these places where your customers, your users, your newsletter subscribers should be updated, and think about the logic. For example, what I see happen a lot is when people cancel a product, they give a reason like, oh, it doesn't do X and your competitor does X. And then what you do, and this is the biggest like, duh, like I feel like Homer Simpson on this, when like, actually, hey, customer that's canceling, our product actually does X. You just didn't know.
Yep. That's one of the most painful things.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. It sucks.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, you wanna punch yourself in the face in front of a mirror so you see the pain and not just feel it. Yeah, that one sucks. That's a hard one. I feel like we could do a whole episode on that, on like how to keep your customers up to date with what's going on and how to educate them and train them. That's a good one. All right. So I love all of this, right? So this is, I think, really good stuff. Let me ask you this. I think that maybe I'm wrong, but I think that by now some people have caught up to the fact that when they want to do, let's say, a split tests, that you need certain volume to make those tests statistically relevant or to make them practical, even, right? So if you have 10 visits on your website a month, then you know it's not time to do a B test right now or set up something super sophisticated. How about email list sizes? Would you say that there's certain points where would you start being super sophisticated and fancy if you have the resources, even if your email list is just 100 people? Probably not, right? When are the kind of the sizes or the scale where you think, okay, once you get to this amount of emails, you should start segmenting, you should start, you know, tracking or A/B testing subject lines and other things. You should start becoming more and more sophisticated as the scale goes on. Is that an accurate way of thinking about this? Is it a matter of scale? Is it a matter of something else? Are there certain benchmarks that you have in mind or that you've seen work really well on that?
Yeah, great question. And absolutely. So there's a very simple rule of thumb, and I'll give some examples to it too. And the rule of thumb is that you're looking for 100 conversions per variation. So if you, and I'll do math for everybody because, you know, math can be hard sometimes. So if you have a 1,000 person email list, and your open rate which is basically impacted by the subject line in the first line in your email, because that shows up in the email providers. If you have 1,000 people on your list, you have a 20% open rate on your emails, you're essentially getting 200 people to open it, right? So if that's a general like guidance there, where if you're getting 200 people to open it, that means you can run one A/B test in whatever amount of time you get those 200 people to open it, which is probably each blast. So that's a general rule. Like, you want 100 per variation. So if I had an email list and I have 1,000 subscribers and 200 people that are opening it, I would run an A/B test on my subject line and possibly that first line in the email to see if I can come up with better subject lines and learn more about what proper subject lines are. The funny thing about email is, like, there's a lot of different ways to do this, but the funny thing about email is, like, if you send one email and it's to 1,000 people and you run an A/B test of, like, let's say a short subject line and a long subject line, and then one of those works better, then the next test you run should be aligned around the short one and then testing different copy for the short one if the short one won. Because what happens is you're not going to be able to literally in one email learn and actually get a higher conversion rate. You're just going to learn in that email and realize that this one version worked better than the other. So then the next time you inform it with that, you get into a cadence and you should be responsible of doing that. So you have to be a little disciplined or you won't get like effective results. So that's my general rule of thumb. If you're not, another example would be if you have, let's say you have 5,000, you know, subscribers to your email list, and every time you get a 10% open rate, that would be you have 500 opens. So you could test more than one subject line. Maybe you could test two or three. So then you'd have four total counting the control if you did three variations. Then you would still follow the same rule and then be able to learn. But you want to make sure each of these are distinct and there's only like a single variable or single thing you're changing. But that gets into the A/B testing stuff. Even if you don't do it that sophisticated and you're just testing like that, that's the rule. And that works for anything, whether it's like 100 signups on your site, right? Or anything like that. Or, you know, when you send a welcome email, you're getting 100 opens on it, or I'm sorry, 200 opens on it, then you can start testing it. So I like to wait till that point and then I start testing. One example is also, I have an email list right now that's about 400 people and there's about a 60% open rate. And so we're already going to start running A/B tests on it because the open rate's so high. And we're going to try to get the open rate either even higher or because of the subject line, try to get the click rates higher.
So is this because culture matters, email list?
Yeah. This is the culture email list, correct. Yeah.
So tell people so this is basically Heaton sending some of the best, like how to create a great culture and how to think about culture within the company type of content he finds. He curates it, sends it. If people are interested in that, where can they give you their email to be part of this?
Yeah. It's bit.ly. So bit.ly/culturegood. And we've already learned a bunch of stuff. We have like two places we ask for feedback. People have given us feedback already and we've learned a ton about it. Like, for example, just to riff on it for a second, and it is email, right? So we are talking about the right subject.
Yeah.
We learned that we first were sending like 7 or 8 links with a bunch of commentary and opinion about it. And a lot of people, I would say at least a handful or more, like maybe a dozen people have emailed us saying, hey, we'd like less links and we only want the best content. Mm. So reading between the lines, we're like, okay, they don't think all this shit's good. Fuck. excuse me. But that's bad. We have to get better at curating. I understand that. This is a new newsletter, so it takes time. And then we realized like the last email we sent, we only had like 3 links in there and a quote and like a tip. And basically that one actually worked out really well. We had like 5 things to read there. And that one actually had less clicks, unfortunately, which kind of bugged me, but that's okay. But the sentiment and the responses on those has been great. And we also said, hey, we learned from your feedback, so we made some changes. And people love it. One thing people forget about email is it's an ongoing conversation. And so you want to update it. You want to put at the top like something that has continuity so you're building that relationship. So that's another big tip here, which is like when you're thinking of email, if you're sending repetitive email, have some area where you're building a relationship. So we always have a message at the top. For the last 2 or 3 emails, this is like the 4th one we sent. But the last 2 or 3, we've had the same thing at the top. Now what I'm learning is we need to change that shit at the top and make it so that we are actually having a conversation with people because people love that. And so that would be a big tip I would give, which is if you can find a way to have an area, usually at the top, where you're giving a personalized message, it's different every time and it's contextual to the email, the category, the topic, and it's different than the rest of the content, that can really help build that relationship. And it'll probably get people to keep opening it and wanting to like read what you have to say that's very custom, even if it's just a sentence or two.
Yeah, I love that. So I'll add on that, and then with my tip, I'll riff on your tip with my tip, and we'll wrap up this episode. So to me, this is cool. Like you need to, a lot of people think that when it comes to marketing email, they need to dehumanize the email. It needs to come from contact at or marketing at or support at or don't reply. This is my favorite one. Don't reply at. We're sending you an email so you don't reply back. And then it needs to be in HTML and it needs to be designy. And the subject line needs to be written as if it's a billboard on the 101. And no part, and it's like signed by the team or some group of humans, or even worse, the company, you know, yours truly, Closeire Incorporated. And so they dehumanize it as much as possible. And if you dehumanize, anything you dehumanize, people will disengage with, right? Whenever it doesn't seem like it's a human, you know, communicating with another human being or communicating with me, I will be less interested to engage and communicate back or convert in any way. So send emails, even if they are marketing emails or newsletters, through a real person's email address. We still send our newsletters through Stelly at Closeire, right? And then a lot of people decide to reply to that email, right? And ask me a question, give me a contact, or tell me what we fucked up, or give me an idea or whatever, right? But people reply to our newsletter because, even if it's a generic newsletter, because it comes from Stelly. And they know that they can reply to it. It's my email. So send it from a real human being. No replies or anything like that. If you can, I'm a big fan of plain text. If you don't have to, don't use HTML graphics and anything. Don't make it fancy. Write like a human being to a human being. And engagement will typically go up if people feel like you're talking to them and it's a real person speaking to them. Even if it's Bobby or Mary from the marketing team, right? It just needs to sound like a real human being. It can make a really, really big difference. All right. That's it from us from this episode. We'll hear you very, very soon.
Bye.